welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. Mark Livonier, your host for this hour of Radio Variety, as we bring you a broadcast of the Shell Chateau from 1935. In this episode, we'll hear a scene from the play-turned-motion picture Within the Law, which first opened on Broadway in 1912 and ran for 541 performances. It was then made into a motion picture in 1923 with Norma Talmadge as star. This broadcast of the Shell Chateau first aired on CBS on July 13, 1935.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The makers of Super Shell Gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is the world's outstanding entertainer, Al Jolson, with an all-star bill of famous guest stars. We switch you now to Shell Chateau, where you'll be greeted by Al Jolson.
Friends, here's where your worry ends, where everyone understands. Good evening, friends. Your name somehow I can't recall right now, but know you all I vow. Good evening, friends. Dear Teflon, when I met down, Monsieur Berry, when I said, Tamatali-boo-way-boo-way-boo-way-boo, I know you all I do. Good evening, friends. Pull up a chair and turn the lights down low. You're at our Shell Chateau. Good evening, friends. We're on the air just once a week, you know. Each week a brand new show for you, my friend. The music starts, the curtain parts, an hour of fun for everyone. Although it's true that I cannot see you, I almost feel I do. Good evening, friends.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. And once again, I welcome you to Shell Chateau, where each Saturday night we offer you the foremost stars of the entertainment world. Just listen. Star number one, Victor Young in his music. And besides being a musician, Victor is also a great writer. In fact, his whole family are writers. His brother writes songs that no one will sing. His sister writes poetry that no one will read. His father writes books that no one will buy. And Victor writes checks that no one will cash. Star number two, Miss Lee Wiley, the singing favorite of the radio. Not only is Lee a great singer, but she could win first prize for a beautiful figure. And I understand she maintains this figure by swimming. And speaking about swimming, the other day I went to Santa Monica Beach to take a little swim, and I saw the funniest sight. There was a skinny girl in swimming, and oh, was she skinny. Well, every time she went out to the water, a big police dog ran out after her and brought her back. She was so skinny, the dog thought she was a stick. Oh, I'm killed. Star number three, James J. Jeffries, former heavyweight boxing champion of the world. In recent years, it may interest you folks to know, Mr. Jeffries has been running a training camp. I went up there for the weekend, and I noticed a beautiful thing about Jim's place. And Jim himself, well, he hasn't forgotten any of his old friends, his cronies. He's given as many of them jobs, as many as possible. I went into the dining room to get something to eat, and naturally, all the waiters were ex-pugilists. Isn't that marvelous? So I said to the waiter, will you give me some cauliflower, please? And what do you think the waiter did? He laid his ear right on my plate. Star number four. Remember I told you last week we'd have a surprise for you? Well, we've got it. George Sidney and Charlie Murray, better known to movie fans everywhere as Mr. Cohen and Mr. Kelly. These two comedians are forever battling, always fighting. In fact, they came into Shell Chateau with black eyes. How do you think they got them? From eating. They ate more than they could pay for. Joan Blondell, star number five, one of Hollywood's most popular screen stars. Miss Blondell is the very essence of beauty. What charm, what grandeur, such a bundle of sweet femininity. And if any of you guys don't believe it, I'll suck you right in a beezer. You remember, folks, oh, by the way, this is cute. This is really cunning. You remember a few weeks ago I told you that my father came to Hollywood? Well, he's been having the time of his life. He's been in the motion picture studios every day, knows everybody on the lot by their first name. Well, you'll never believe this. Today, my father was standing in front of a big sightseeing bus, and he was inviting everybody to the theater. No matter who came by, he said, "Come on, everybody, get in the bus." Frank Creighton. Frank Creighton is my son's picture at one of our Hollywood theaters. I walked up and I said, "Papa, what are you doing? You have over 100 people in the bus, and you're still inviting more. Do you realize how much this is going to cost you to take all those people to the theater?" He said, "Don't worry, Al. It ain't going to cost me so much." I saw a big sign in front of the theater. It said, "Entire balcony, 25 cents. And now a little song to my dad. He's listening in, I know. It's entitled, and I dedicate it to him, "One in a Million." You're one in a million. You're the well-known real McCoy. I could shout and jump with joy. I'm happy I found you. You're one in a million. You're the brightest shining star of the millions that shine around you. Like the first dime John D. gave away as a keepsake, the first prize award paid for playing the sweepstake. You're one in a million. When a certain dream comes true, it's a million to one, it's you. You're one in a million. You're the well-known real McCoy. I could shout and jump with joy. I'm happy I found you. You're one in a million. You're the brightest shining star of the millions that shine around you. Like the first dime John D. gave away as a keepsake, the first prize award paid for playing the sweepstake. You're one in a million. When a certain dream comes true, it's a million to one. It's you.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our first guest this evening has been the idol of millions. Even today, when a fighter looks good, a trainer will say, he must have a little of that old Jim Jeffries in him. Back in the days when the fight racket was a great deal tougher than it is now, a championship prize fight was a rough and tough he-man game. A mere 25-round bout was considered a sissy affair. They went 30, 40, yes, 50 rounds, and even to a finish. And in those days, fighters didn't get guarantees of a half a million. They didn't fight in stadiums where people came in evening clothes. They were really fighting. And that's why I'm so proud tonight to introduce a man I think is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, heavyweight champion that ever lived. Ladies and gentlemen, with pride and pleasure, I welcome to Shell Chateau a champion of champions, James J. Jeffries.
Well, Jim, honestly, I'm all goose flesh. I'm so glad to see you.
You look like $1 million. Tell me, do you think you could go 25 rounds?
I couldn't go one now.
Why is that?
I'm too old.
Oh, don't be silly, Jim. You're too old. A man is only as old as he feels.
Well, I must be about 19.
That's cute. You look great. By the way, Jim, what do you weigh?
About 245 pounds.
245?
Yes.
Well, what did you weigh when you were fighting?
Oh, about 204 or 205.
204 or 205. And funny thing, you look so fit now, honestly. You don't look over too well. You look about 210 tops. But I never was lucky enough to see you when you were champion. I want to go and see you fight, but they wouldn't let me get out of my cradle. So, suppose you tell me, Jim, what was the toughest fight you ever had?
Well, my memory is Sharkey was one of the toughest fights I ever had. So was Fitz. My second fight with Fitz was one of the tough fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sharkey was the toughest, and then came Fitz.
Yes, Fitz cut me up more than any fighter ever lived. He hit me so hard in the second or third round that I felt needles in my feet.
Sure.
He struck me on top of the head.
Yeah.
With his left hand hook. And believe me, I was hit. I thought the floor come up.
You did, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, let me tell you something. I want to know, you know, not only about Fitzsimmons, say, gee whiz, I've heard about him in the record, but tell me about the fella Sharkey, you know, with all that stuff tattooed on his chest. What kind of a fighter was he?
Well, believe me, he was a fighter.
Yeah?
He'd never give you a minute's rest. He'd like a bunch of tigers at you. He never quit. He never knew what it was. Every round was alike. We fought 25 rounds. In the second round, I hit Sharkey, knocked him down. He stood up. He got up. He rolled over and got up just like a cub bear.
Yeah.
He tore into me like he was never hit. From that time on, I took my right hand and went after him. And I broke three of his ribs. And in the 17th round, I broke three of his ribs. And he still stayed the 25 rounds. I couldn't knock him out.
Well, I guess he was pretty tough. But I want to ask you something, Jim. Do you think today, you know, that the fighters of today compared to the fighters of the days, you know, when you were fighting, like Jim Corbett, Fitzsimmons, Gus Rulin, Tom Sharkey, do Bear and Schmeling and those fellas, do they compare to those fighters I was
telling you? That's a hard question for me to answer. Being an old-timer, you know, us old-timers, we don't think so. In my day, I had to fight real fighters. Men had to learn how to fight.
Yeah?
It was an art. Today, they make fighters overnight. In my day, we had to get out and hit that old road and work plenty. And believe me, we had to work. Our work was harder than our fight and harder. And we enjoyed it. After we got in shape, well, we didn't mind it at all.
Then you mean the idea you enjoyed it, but today is the day of money. Today is the day to get million-dollar purses. In those days, you fought for just what you got to eat. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, that is part of it.
Well, look, what I want to know is about diet. Now, today, fighters, for instance, do they have to eat good or drink a lot of water or, you know what I mean, get a lot of sleep, things of that sort?
Well, they've got to have all those things. A fighter's training is just as essential as the fighting itself. A man should be careful what he eats and the right things and drink little.
Drink little? What do you mean, water?
Water or anything else.
Well, I ought to be a great fighter. I don't think I've had any water for 2 years, really, I mean. But I'm going to tell you something right now, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to make Jim blush. You know, you might think he's old and could retire comfortably now, but he's a long way from retiring. Jim is doing a wonderful thing for the kids out here in California. He's got a ranch out here, and he has a gymnasium, and all the kids from miles around come to Jim Jeffries' place to learn to fight. Jeffries trains them and makes them do road work. And every Thursday night, he gives them a chance to fight in front of an audience in a little barn that he has on his ranch. Jim, do you think you'll ever develop a champion from any of these kids you're working on?
Well, 4 or 5 years ago when I started in, I thought I would, but I'm doubtful now. You know, you take a boy after he gets to be about 20 years old, he begins to think he knows it all. And it's hard to teach him. You take the kid 17 years old, they do better from the time they're 17 to 20 than the other time that I found out there. And I'm afraid that I'm going to have a hard time. I hope someday to get a boy that I'll be able to say, here's the champion of the world.
Oh, that's swell. And I wish you lots of luck. By the way, one thing I wish you'd tell me. When you retired as undefeated champion, who did you give your title to?
Well, the book says I gave it to Tommy Burns. But I don't know. I don't think I had any right to give it away. Anyway, if I could give it away, I'd have given it to somebody I liked. I may have given it to my wife.
And why not? Why not? That's not a bad idea. Sure, give the title to your wife. And Jim, listen, how is your wife? Is she a good fighter?
I wouldn't give her for all the women ever I knew.
You wouldn't, huh? But that's not answering my question. I don't care about that business. You wouldn't give it all the women you knew. I asked you one thing and you evaded it. Is your wife a good fighter? That's what I want to know.
I've been married 32 years and I've never won a fight.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a toast to the undefeated champion of the world, Mrs. James J. Jeffries. Now I'd like to present a glamorous and talented young lady whose ability I know very well. We were in the same show in New York for many weeks. And as soon as I found out she was here in California, I asked her to come and sing at Shell Chateau. It is a pleasure to present that dramatic singing star, Miss Lee Wiley. Tonight, Miss Wiley dramatized a song from my picture, Going to Your Dance. The song is called The Little Things You Used to Do. The scene is a little restaurant called The Hole in the Wall, located down by the waterfront in San Pedro, California, where the ships come in. The little restaurant is run by Kitty, played by Miss Wiley. Today, the fleet's in, and Kitty is anxiously waiting for a sailor boy who has just come ashore. Mary, a waitress, addresses Kitty, who is behind the counter as the curtain rises.
Come on, on, Kitty. Don't stand there mooning out the window. We've got to get these dishes ready. Besides, if he's coming, he'll be here in a minute. Unless he's forgotten.
What do you mean, forgotten?
Well, the Haverford hasn't been in San Pedro in over a year, and some sailors have short memories.
Not my Bill. We never said goodbye, Mary. It was just Alfida saying. I didn't tell you, but Bill said to wait for him. The next time he got into port, it was to stay.
You mean we'll have to take another partner in here?
Well, either that or you'll have to go it alone.
Of course, it all depends on what Bill says.
He promised to get a little house in the Baduga Hills. With flowers growing all around, and we'd
oh,
have...
Oh, you're a fool to believe everything a sailor tells you. How do you know but what he hasn't got a girl in every port he tells the same thing to?
Oh, you're just saying that to keep me. But you can't.
Well, so long, young buck. I'll see you later.
Look, Mary. Here he comes now. Don't he look grand? He hasn't changed a bit. Mary, do me a favor and go back in the kitchen till I can say hello, will you?
All right. But I can see right now I'm not going to get any work out of you today.
Give us a cup of java, sister.
A cup of... What was that?
A cup of java. Coffee to you, landlubbers. And make it snappy. We aren't freezing, hurry up.
Oh, yes. Yes, java, of course.
Sure. Say, you're close enough to the waterfront to be seagoing in your talk here. You act like you'd never seen a sailor before.
Yes. Yes, we serve most of our meals to sailors. Will you have one lump of sugar or two?
Three. I like sweetness. Say, this ain't a bad little snug. You got it fixed up nice.
I'm glad you like it.
How long you been here, sister?
A little over a year.
Well, say, you must have been here before the Haverford shoved off the last time.
Yes, we just opened then.
Yeah. Say, you know, it seems to me that I've been here before myself.
Seems to me you were.
Yeah, I was pretty cockeyed to most of my last leave. Well, say, do you own this place?
Yes, half of it.
Well, tell me, did you ever have a girl working for you by the name of Katie or Kitty or something?
Yes, Kitty.
Yeah, that's it. Say, she was a sweet kid. Whatever became of her?
I don't know. Got tired waiting around and went back to Frisco.
You know, she put me on the boat the last time we left Pedro, and she cried a bucket of tears. I was sorry for her. And before I got on the ship, she said, "I'll be the same," and handed me the mushiest letter. When I come to and read it the next day, I couldn't believe a dame could fall so hard.
You never answered that letter?
Ah, of course not. I didn't want to get in any deeper. I dropped her when we pulled anchor. Well, what do I owe you, sister?
Nickel.
Oh, here. Here's two bits. Take a dime out for yourself. Oh, say, by the way, have you got anything on for the night, sister? Say, what do you say? Let's go over to L.A. and do the town.
No, thanks. I must stay here.
Well, that's your hard luck. Well, I guess I'll be shoving off.
By the way,
if you ever see that kitty again, tell her I didn't forget her, will you?
Sure.
Come on,
Cadet. Goodbye, Bill. Those ashes on the floor, the way you'd slam the door, I miss him when the day is through. When I sit alone and think of you and the little things you used to do, the spot upon your tie and the way that you could lie, when I found out you've been untrue, but you'll never know how much I love you. And the little things you used to do, all your little faults I used to see, would make me angry then. But I'd love them all if I could be back in your arms again. The way you used to clown and the way that you would frown at any other man I knew, but you'll never know how much I love you and the little things you used to do. When we parted, I was satisfied to let you go. but it's hard to get you off my mind. Now I'm learning to regret the day I let you go. You left a million memories behind. Those ashes on the floor and the way you'd slam the door, I miss them when the day is through. When I sit alone and think of you and the little things you used to do, the spot upon your tie and the way that you could lie. When I found out you'd been untrue, but you'll never know how much I love them. All the little things you used to do, all your little faults I used to see, would always make me angry, dear. But I love them all. If I could be back in your arms again. The way you used to clown and the way that you would frown, than any other man I knew. But you'll never know how much I love them. And the little things you used to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've seen Charlie Murray and George Sidney fighting for years. That's all they do is fight. And that's what has made them one of the outstanding comedy teams in America today. You've seen them in moving pictures called The Cohen and the Kellys, where they fight with each other in every reel. But since they've been around the chateau here, they've only had one fight. It started 3 days ago, and it's still going on. Here they come fighting, Mr. Cohen and Mr. Kelly.
Hiya, sir.
Hiya, Cohen.
Why don't you go where you're looking?
You lowlife, you.
Wait till I explain something to you.
Say, don't talk to me, you weasel.
A weasel? Say, that's a new one. What is a weasel?
A weasel is an insult to a monkey, and even that's paid you a compliment.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a weasel, huh? Mm. Now, don't forget, every insect has its own enemy. And from now on, I'm your black widow.
Now, come along, Doc. I was only fooling. You know, I haven't seen you since I left the old neighborhood. And tell me, how's your wife?
Oh, have I got trouble.
Yeah, what's the matter?
Well, I got a letter today from a gang of racketeers, and they said if I didn't send them $10,000 right away, they would steal my wife.
Oh, that's too bad. And what did you do about it?
Well, what could I do? I told them I didn't have any money, but I was interested in their proposition.
Well, where are you living now?
Oh, a fine place. I'm living in Azusa.
Ha-ha, there's a nice little town. Yeah. And it's growing, too.
I should say so. You know, we got a newspaper there now?
Yeah, sure. I passed through there last Sunday and threw it out of my car.
Mm-hmm. Say, where you live now?
I'm living in Yorba Linda.
Yorba Linda? Hmm. I often wondered who lived there. So it's you, huh?
Say, do you remember Adolf Schultz?
What's his name?
Who?
Adolf Schultz.
I don't remember.
You mean Schultz the butcher.
Yes, but he's not a butcher any longer. He runs a tailor shop.
Yeah?
Well, see, he made this suit I'm wearing now.
Schultz made that suit?
Mm-hmm.
He's still a butcher.
What's the matter with this suit?
Oh, it's all right. It's a fine piece of goods. Hey, when that suit gets old and shabby, don't throw it away. It'll come in handy someday.
What for?
To be laid out in.
Say, now listen. I don't want to hurt you because I like you.
Well, I like you, too. We could like each other. We're a great combination, Cohen and Kelly.
Wait a minute. What's the matter with saying Kelly and Cohen?
Why should I say Kelly first?
Because the Irish are always first. They're first in everything.
Yeah, first to start a fight.
Yes, and the first to finish one.
Yeah, but you had to come to us for the greatest fighter of them all.
And who is that?
John L. Solomon.
Oh.
You mean John L. Sullivan. Well, what other great man have you got?
Who was the first man to fly across the Atlantic Ocean all by himself?
Well, I'll bite. Who was it?
Morris Lindbergh.
You mean Charles Lindbergh. And don't forget this, that he was half Irish on his mother's side.
Oh, half Irish. Hmm. That's the reason he only flew across one way. And he did that on his father's side.
Say, why don't you try to talk sense?
Say, and another thing. Who invented compound interest?
Say, don't talk to me about inventions, because the Irish are the greatest inventors that ever lived.
Go on. What did the Irish ever invent?
The telegraph.
I suppose you're going to tell me that Marconi is an Irishman.
His name is not Marconi. It's Macrooney. And look at St. Patrick.
St. Patrick, what did he ever do?
Didn't he drive all the snakes out of Ireland?
Sure, you came over on the first boatload.
Well, thank heavens there's no Coens in Ireland.
Well, maybe that's what's the matter with it. Say, that's a bad cough you got there. I don't like it.
You don't like it? You don't hear me bragging about it, do you?
Why don't you go to a doctor?
I did. He gave me a box of pills and told me to take one 3 times a day with a glass of whiskey.
And how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right now. I'm about 2 weeks behind on the pills and 4 weeks ahead on the whiskey.
Hey, why don't you come down to my house tonight? I'll fix you up.
No, I can't go. It's the baby's night out, and I have to stay home with the nurse.
Mm-hmm. Well, so long. I got to go down to see my broker now.
What's he doing now?
I don't know. The jury is still out.
Say, that reminds me. What did you ever do with the money I gave you to invest for me?
Oh, don't worry about it. I invested your money so good that even I can't get it.
Yes, but how long will I have to wait before I can get it?
You wouldn't want to live that long.
Say, I tell you what we'll do.
What?
We'll declare a moratorium.
What's that?
Don't you know what a moratorium is?
Oh, yes. It's the place where they hold prize fights.
No. It's share the wealth plan. Now, you owe me $50, right?
Right.
And to show you I'm your pal, I'll forget half of it.
And to show you that I'm your pal, I'll forget the other half.
That's fair enough.
Here.
Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
What are you trying to do? Pull something on me? You'll forget the other half, eh? Well, you'll pay me that $50 now, and I'd break every bone in your body.
You're choking me. Take your hand off of my coat. You're bending it.
But if you don't pay me that $50, I'll bend you double.
All right, I'll pay you.
Come on.
Yeah, hold out your hand, you lowlife, you. Here, there's 5. There's 10. There's 15. Say, by the way, what was the name of that picture you told me to go to see the other night?
Life Begins at 40.
That's right, Sam Rogers, and Life Begins at 40. There's 40. 45. There's 50. Now we're even.
You're all right, Cohen. And just for that, I want you to come up to my house tonight and have dinner.
I don't want to go to your house.
And why not?
Well, I may be putting somebody out.
Oh, no, there's nobody there to be put out.
Well,
say, you'll either come over or else.
Oh, all right.
And besides, you'll be doing me a great favor.
Favor how?
Well, you see, my wife says I'm the homeliest looking man in the world. And I want her to take one good look at you.
It's another insult.
Still fighting after all those years. Charlie Murray and George Sidney. But they're only fooling. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just at all, let me tell you, they love each other. And now, folks, I'm going to tell you about a new song I want to sing tonight. You folks remember a song I sang in a picture, The Singing Fool, called Sonny Boy? Well, for the past 5 or 6 years, I've been trying to find a song that might take its place. Now, whether this song is as great as Sonny Boy, I don't know. But the title alone, A Little Bundle from Heaven, it just seemed to hit me. And I want to dedicate this song to all you fathers and mothers who have a little bundle of heaven of your own. Please, Victor.
Daily work is done, then home I hurry on the run with a brand new toy for a baby boy. Then I kiss his sleepy head before we tuck him into bed When he shuts his eyes, then I realize. A little bundle from heaven brought heaven on earth to me. Tiny little toad, he's got the cutest little nose. My little bundle from heaven. He plays with toys all around him, and how he does laugh with glee. He made life divine, I can't believe he's really mine. My little bundle from heaven. You should see him walk in. He falls and stumbles along the way. I'm proud of his talking. I heard him saying, Daddy, today. The Lord above must have crowned him. He's king of our family. See him sitting there, his throne a little baby chair. My little bundle from heaven. A little bundle from heaven. Brought heaven on earth to me. Tiny little toes, say, he's got the cutest little nose. My little bundle from heaven. You know what? He plays with toys all around him. And say, how he does laugh with glee. He made life divine. I can't believe that he is mine. My little bundle from heaven. Say, you know something? You ought to see him walking. He walks now. He falls and he stumbles. He stumbles along the way. Oh, and listen. Oh, my baby. You know what he's doing? Oh, say, he's talking. He said, Daddy, today. The Lord above must have crowned him. He's king of our family. See him sitting there, his little throne, a baby chair. My little bundle from heaven.
Shell L. Jolson. We're back in Shell Chateau and the show is going on. You've already heard some of the sounds on our bill, and you're going to hear a lot more. In fact, you ain't heard nothing yet. Can you beat your feet to the music of Victor Young and his orchestra? But before he plays this medley, I've got to tell you what happened last Sunday morning. Victor and I went down to Caliente for the weekend, and what a time we had. But from Saturday 9 o'clock until Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, I didn't see Victor. I couldn't find him anywhere. And when I woke up Sunday morning, there he was, asleep on the piano. After lots of shaking, I finally woke him up and I said, Victor, I'm going to have breakfast and I think you want to have something too. You know, to straighten yourself out. Gee, the way you look, you must have had an awful rough night. And Victor looked at me out of one eye, the good one, and he said, all right, order me a Kentucky Colonel breakfast. I said, Vic, a Kentucky Colonel breakfast? Are you damn for your what? What do you mean a Kentucky Colonel breakfast? He said, yeah, that's what I mean. I want a quarter rye, a steak, and a bulldog. I said, but Vic, I can understand you wanting a quarter rye and a steak. But what on earth do you want the bulldog for? And he said, to eat the steak, you darn fool. And now that Vic has recovered from that, he's going to play for you a medley which consists of three songs. Kiss Me Goodnight, and a new tune of his own called You Saved My Life,
and another hit song. You're all I need, my wonderful one. You're all... Go on, play it, Victor, play it. I want to welcome as a guest to Shell Chateau one of the most popular and charming of the younger Hollywood stars. Her name is Joan Blondell, and tonight she's going to present a scene from that famous American melodrama, Within the Law, with Crawford Kent as Edward Gilder. I first saw Joan Blondell in a show in New York called Penny Arcade and recognized her talents then. I called up Jack Warner and I said, "Believe me, Jack, there's a girl here in a show in New York. That's marvelous. What possibility she has for the screen?" Well, a word to the wise is sufficient. Jack Warner brought her to Hollywood, and ladies and gentlemen, the rest you know. May I present Miss Joan Blondell. And now to set the scene for this little playlist. Within the Law is a story of a girl who works in a department store. She's just been sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for shoplifting, although she swears she's innocent. But before she starts to serve her sentence, she persuades her guard, Detective Sergeant Cassidy, to take her to see the owner of the store where she's been employed. There is something she wants to tell him about how to prevent stealing in his store. The scene, the office of Edward Gilder, owner of the Gilder Stores. Gilder, by the way, is not in his office as Detective Cassidy entered with Mary Turner, the convicted shoplifter, played by Joan Blundell. But Gilder's secretary speaks to her sympathetically.
I'm terribly sorry, Mary. Terribly sorry.
Are you, Sarah? Nobody's been near me the whole time I've been in jail.
But we're all so sorry. Helen Morris has been asking about you. She's all broken up.
Who's Helen Morris?
Why, don't you know her?
No.
She says she's a great friend of yours.
I don't know her.
In the glove department. She's been here today about four times just to find out... Oh, here's Mr. Gilder now.
Oh, good afternoon, Sergeant.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Gilder. Well, I brought her.
So I see. Sarah, you may go.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry about this, my girl.
You should be.
Come, come, that's no tone to take.
What'd you expect?
A decent amount of humility from one in your position.
Would you be humble if you were being sent to prison for 3 years for something you didn't do?
Ah, don't mind them, Mr. Gilder. They all talk like that. It don't do them no good, but they all swear they never done it, no matter how right we got them.
I tell you, I didn't do it.
Now, what's the use of all this pretense? You were given a fair trial.
Oh, no, I wasn't. If it had been fair, I shouldn't be here.
That's another thing they all say.
Do you call it fair when the only lawyer I had was a boy the court told me to take? Trying his first case, getting experience at my expense.
The jury found you guilty?
Because they'd been out for 3 hours, and the judge threatened to lock them up all night. They were tired, and they wanted to get home, and the easy thing to do was to find me guilty and let it go at that. Was that fair? And was it fair for you to go to court this morning and tell the judge that I ought to be sent to prison as an example to the others?
Are you suggesting
no,
that
I... No, I heard you. It wasn't, did I do it? Or didn't I do it? It was to be a warning to the others. Mr. Gilder, as God is my judge, you're sending me to prison for 3 years. For something I didn't do. Why did you ask the judge to send me to prison?
The thieving that's been going on in this store for over a year has got to stop.
But sending me to prison won't stop it.
Oh, perhaps not. But the discovery and punishment of the other guilty ones will. Now, you sent me word that you would tell me how to stop the theft here. If you can, I might be able to do something towards getting you out of your present difficulties. Although I can make no definite promises. Can you give me the name of your accomplice?
I have no accomplices. I never saw anything in my life. Must I go on telling you over and over again? Why don't anyone believe me?
I'll let you control yourself. You must go. Now, why did you send me that message if you've nothing to tell me?
I have something to tell you. Only I sort of lost my grip walking through the street with this detective. Handcuffed to him this way.
What is it you have to tell me?
Well, when you sit in a cell for 3 months waiting trial the way I did, and then for another month wondering what your sentence is going to be, you do a lot of thinking. And while I was thinking, I got the idea that if I could talk to you, I might be able to make you understand what's really wrong. And if I could do that, it might help the other girls. And then what happened to me wouldn't seem so awful. Mr. Gilbert, do you really want to stop the girls from stealing?
Most certainly I do.
Then give them a chance.
What do you mean?
A chance to live, to get enough food to eat and a decent room to sleep in and shoes that will keep their feet off the sidewalk. Do you think any girl wants to steal? Do you think she wants to go out
to... So this is the way you're taking up my time, eh? To make a maudlin plea for a lot of dishonest girls. When I thought you were bringing me facts.
It's a fact that we work 8 hours a day for $12 a week, isn't it? That's a fact, isn't it? And no girl can live decently today on that and buy food and clothes and pay room rent and car fare.
I don't care to discuss these.
And I don't want to discuss anything. I only want to give you what you asked for, facts. When they first locked me up, I just sat there and hated you.
Naturally.
And then I thought maybe you didn't understand. And that if I told you and explained how things really are, maybe you could change them some way.
Change my business policy because you asked me?
But do you know how we live, Mr. Gilder? Three of us in one room, doing our cooking over a two-burner gas stove and our own washing and ironing in the evening, after being on our feet for 8 hours.
I provided chairs behind the counter.
But have you ever seen a girl sit in one of them? She wouldn't dare. Because she knows the manager of the department will soon find an excuse to get rid of her. So she just stands there all day long and then walks home to save car fare, summer or winter. But she's usually so tired by that time it doesn't make much difference which it is.
Now, what has this got to do with...
And when she's ill and got to stop work, what's she going to do then? Do you know that the first time a girl does something out of the way, it's usually because she needs a doctor or some luxury like that?
I'm not their guardian. I can't watch over them after they leave the store. I pay the current rate of wages as much as any other store pays.
I know that, Mr. Gilder,
No man living does more for his employees than I do.
But you don't give them enough to live on.
I pay them the same as other stores.
But that isn't enough.
Oh, so that's the plea you're making for yourself and your friends. That you are forced to steal.
I wasn't forced to steal, I didn't steal. But that's the plea, as you call it, that I'm making for the rest. There are hundreds of them stealing because they don't get enough to eat. You asked me to tell you how to stop the theft. Well, I've done it. You've asked me to give you the names of my accomplices. Well, there's only one name I know, Mr. Gilder, to blame for this whole business. And that's yours.
What?
Why don't you do something about
how
it?
How dare you talk
I'm asking
to me like
you
this.
To do something.
How dare you?
What have I to risk? You've done all to me that you can do. But I'm trying to give you a chance to do something for the others.
Take her away off.
Yes, he can
all
take
right.
me now. I've said all I've got to say. But 3 years isn't forever, Mr. Gilder. And when I come out, you're going to pay me for every minute of them.
Come on.
And you're going to pay me for every minute of the 5 years I've starved making money for you. And you're going to pay me for what I'm losing today. And you're going to pay me for these handcuffs. You're going to pay me. You're going to pay me.
And now from a grand picture called Paige Miss Glory, starring Marion Davies, a grand person, we have a grand new song. From that picture, Paige Miss Glory, I will sing Paige Miss Glory. Paige Victor.
Each little word you utter is like a melody, like a tuneful spoonful of music to me. Each little smile you give me is like an April day. I miss you every moment you're away. When the moon is new, I always make a little wish or two. And when I want someone to tell them to, what do? I page Miss Glory. When the stars grow bright and sprinkle all the shadows with their light, to add a little bit of romance to a lovely night, I page Miss Glory. I've never seen a sunset, a rainbow in the sky, that ever could compare with the glory of your eyes. So when we're apart, and I begin to feel the teardrops start, and when I get that empty feeling way down in my heart, I page Miss Glory. When the moon is new, I always make a little wish or two. And when I want someone to tell them to, what do? I page Miss Glory. When the stars grow bright and sprinkle all the shadows with their light, to add a little bit of romance to a lovely night, I page Miss Glory. I've I've never seen a sunset, a rainbow in the sky, that ever could compare with the glory of your eyes. So when we're apart, hey, and I begin to feel the teardrops start, and when I get that empty feeling way down in my heart, I say to Miss Glory. Thank you, fathers. Thank you, mothers. Thank you, sisters, and the same goes for you, brothers. Thank the family every Saturday night. Thank you kindly for the letters you write. This is Aldi, your family wealthy. And I want to promise you,
tune in next week at this time when Al Jolson presents Miss Irene Taylor, Willie Howard, Miss Loretta Turnbull, and Henry Hull. Musical selections tonight included Lovely to Look At from Roberta and One in a Million from Going Highbrow. Your announcer, John McIntyre. This program came to you from the NBC studios in Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Shell Chateau, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 13th of July, 1935 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of Variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.